This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a special 1 p.m. start time for you on this Saturday. We are the meat between your World Cup soccer sandwich as Argentina just defeated Belgium, and still to come, the Netherlands against Costa Rica at 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 hours of hockey talk for you this afternoon. We are going to go division by division, team by team, and do a comprehensive recap of everything that has gone on in the NHL through week one of NHL free agency. I say good afternoon to my colleagues Richard and Ezra. And gentlemen, we're going to get underway immediately with the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets, of course, made the one big signing of an unrestricted free agent that happened on July 1st on Canada Day. That was picking up Mathieu Perreault, ex of the Anaheim Ducks. 3 years, $9 million for Mr. Perreault, a $3 million salary cap hit per season. Richie, I'll start with you. What were your thoughts when you saw that Perreault was now a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, you know, Drew, I think it's a two-pronged answer. I think the first part of it, I would say I like Mathieu Perreault as a player. I think he's a skilled forward, not the biggest guy, not the toughest guy. He's a skilled forward, a different kind of player than the Jets have in that he makes his teammates better. He can pass the puck. I think he can help the team on the half boards on the power play, a position I think is of significant need on this team. The contract term is very reasonable. I think they're going to get value probably out of the contract. So that's what I think of the player that they've added. But if you look at it as a whole, what is this team doing? Is he a guy who gets you to the next level and takes you to the playoffs? No. As the roster is currently constructed. So if that's the case, is he a guy who makes you good enough to miss out on the playoffs again, but not bad enough to get a high draft pick? Very possibly. So are we talking about a 5 to 10 top 10 pick next year? Because right now, as the roster is constructed, the Winnipeg Jets, in my mind, have very, very low odds to make the playoffs. So if you look at it in the big picture, if you look at it at a micro level, I think you probably like the move. I think he's an upgrade over Olli Jokinen. If you look at it on a macro level, I don't see how the piece is going to, you know, together for a puzzle here. I just don't see how it works. I don't see what the end goal is here. If you're going to be adding players kind of on a piecemeal basis, if you're not going to be going, you know, are you going for the playoffs this year or not? Right now, as your roster is constructed, to me, you're not really going for the playoffs. If that's the case, trade your veterans, load up on picks, and look at the division that you're in. Realize you're not even close to, you're probably the sixth best team in the division, and Nashville could arguably be better than you. That would put you seventh in a 7-team division. So to me, I like Mathieu Perreault, but I'm not quite sure what the Jets are doing here.
Right, and you have to look at the Mathieu Perreault signing by itself, Richie, and as a whole in regards to what other moves the Jets made, and they didn't make a lot. There were re-signings. They re-signed Adam Party. They re-signed Chris Thorburn. They re-signed Michael Hutchinson. As far as the Mathieu Perreault signing goes, I've always liked Mathieu Perreault, and I thought he did a really good job in Washington. What happened in Anaheim is he got squeezed out. You've got Ryan Kesler coming to Anaheim, and then you've got a guy like Ricard Raquel, a guy that played kind of spot duty for the Anaheim Ducks, but he was kind of squeezed out, and he was asked, Mathieu Perreault, that is kind of what happened there in Anaheim as far as why he wasn't re-signed, and I kind of like the value they got. I think he is an upgrade over Olli Jokinen. And Richie, I like how he was signed for 3 years because that means that he's going to be here for a bit. You know, on a micro level, as you mentioned, I think it is an upgrade over Olli Jokinen. He's got speed. He makes his teammates better. This is a guy that had back-to-back 115-point seasons in the QMJHL. This guy can score, and he was scoring with the Ducks. He was kind of a little bit in between the second and third lines. The issue for me, too, is up the middle still you don't have a lot of size. And Mark Scheifele is the biggest center you have on the top three lines. And Mark Scheifele's game is not a power game, Richie. It's a skill game, and they're expecting him to take another step. And it's unfortunate that Scheifele's season ended the way it did with the injury, because he was starting to play the best hockey of his career, which is only one season, but he was starting to play the best hockey of his career in the second half of the season. You could really see that he was coming into his own. So I really like the Perreault signing. Now, as far as the other moves that the Jets, I guess, didn't make and where this team is going, I have to agree with Richie. The entire division has gotten better, and that includes Nashville, which is really at the bottom of the division. You know, you go out and you improve your team, and, Olli Jokinen goes there, so it's a bit of a wash, I guess, if you think about that. But for the Nashville Predators, Olli Jokinen, there's a good chance he plays second line center there. So I like the Perreault signing. I would have liked to have seen one or two more signings to shore up the D. It's kind of a season in flux with the Jets, because for me, I'm interested to see if players like Josh Morrissey, if Adam Lowry gets a chance, if a guy like Brendan Kitchen gets a chance. To me, the biggest hole, and we've talked about this for probably 2 years now, is a veteran defenseman to shore up the top four on D. Do they go back with Grant Clitson? Does a guy like Josh Morrissey compete for a top four spot? To me, that's very dangerous when you have two defensemen that are drafted in 2012, 2013 playing in your top four or top six. But to me, I was expecting there to be one more signing, because the Jets do have a little bit more room to sign a guy. So to me, I still think they do need to bring in a veteran. And also, you need some more scoring on the wings there in your top six.
Well, talk about the holes that still exist on the team. I want to go back and circle back to a couple of the other signings they made. Mm-hmm. Adam Partey, 1 year, $700,000. I'll ask you about him. I assume the old adage that we've had, which there's no such thing as a bad 1 year signing exists, or applies in this case. And then the Chris Thorburn one, and this one was the one that sort of surprised a lot of people. 3 years, $3.6 million for Chris Thorburn. A lot of people probably thought that maybe it'd be a 1 year deal, but for him to get 3 years, I think that surprised a fair number of people.
Yeah, that contract didn't make any sense. I don't think anybody would have given him more than 2 years on the market, mm-hmm, at $2 million,
like $1 million a year,
yeah, maximum. And I think, to be honest, he's probably likely to have gotten a year and $1 million on the market somewhere.
Well, if the Jets had offered him at 1 year $1 million, I'd have trouble seeing him turn that down.
Well, I don't know. I just don't know how these. And again, I respect Chris Thorburn, and I think he's an integral part of the locker room. And you watch him at practice, that he has a kind of a calming effect, I think, on players. I think he gets along with just about everybody, and he's a heart and soul type guy. But he's an interchangeable fourth line and right winger. And that's at the end of the day what it is. Now, do I respect his game and I like him to be that 13th forward on the team? Yeah, you know what? Even the 12th guy. I don't mind that. He can skate, he can forecheck, again, good character guy, but to give him 3 years, 3.6, and again, no fault to the player, and that'll be, the theme of this show. Because I can't wait for the owners complaining and Gary Bettman complaining and all that about these lockouts. Because these contracts, the majority of them, are laughable. And to be honest, this contract, I believe, is completely disproportionate to the talent that you're getting. I just don't understand the contract. Like, how did this negotiation go? Chris Thorburn's agent says, Chris Thorburn wants to be here. Kevin Cheveldayoff says, well, we want him to be here. Okay, let's try and get something worked out. If you're going to give him 3 years and you pay him less per year because he's not going to get you over 5 goals, is he?
No.
He scored 5 goals and 15 points. I mean, is he going to get 15 points next year? What do you have last year?
I'll look it up right now.
Like, but he's your fourth line right winger.
Last year he had 11 points in 55 games.
At the end of the day, Drew, are the $1.2 million contracts going to really, really kill you? Likely not. It's the $5, $6 million for the guys who aren't that good. And a lot of those contracts were signed this free agent period. That contract, to me, though, still didn't really make any sense. I just don't understand where the leverage was there.
You guys know how much I like Thorpe, so maybe I'll skip that part. But getting back to how much 12, 13, 14 years ago, when salaries were really escalating at a ridiculous pace, I'm thinking Bobby Holik signing with the New York Rangers for $9 million a year. You could possibly blame player agents and the lack of a salary cap for what was going on and the exorbitant amounts of money players were getting. But now you have a maximum term on how many years a player can sign, and you have a salary cap that didn't go up as much, by the way, as we thought, partly due to maybe the Canadian dollar, but it's going to be right around that $69 million mark.
And escrow.
So you look at some of the contracts players are getting, and it's kind of tough to blame players and player agents and the NHLPA for what's going on, because what you see is players getting locked up to bridge contracts and long-term contracts towards the end of the season, if not earlier in the season. And then there are the contracts like PK Subban and Ryan O'Reilly, which are a little bit more difficult because there's the chance of the offer sheet. Ryan O'Reilly obviously was signed to an offer sheet by Calgary. Nobody signed PK Subban to an offer sheet, which was always a possibility, but there's kind of the belief that the Montreal Canadiens will offer him, what, $6, $7 million a year?
They'll match anything.
They'll match anything. So I think that what you saw this year was very similar to last year in that you had players like David Clarkson, who I love. You guys know I'm a big David Clarkson fan, but the type of money he's getting relative to other players of his quality is a little bit ridiculous. And you have that kind of idea that if you don't sign him, he'll go to somewhere else, and that's kind of where you overpay. You saw that quite a bit again this year, and it's unfortunate. And that is something that the owners and the general managers really can't complain about, because at the end of the day, they're the guys that are signing these guys.
Yeah, I mean, they're signing these ridiculous contracts.
Yeah.
I mean, but back to the Jets. Does anybody think they're going to make the playoffs here?
Nope. Not as currently constructed. They have a gaping hole on the left side of the defense, and they have a gaping hole on the left side of the top nine.
Well, hold on.
Have been holes for years.
Right.
Now.
Yeah. And if we're going to talk about that, you know, at this point, and there's a lot to happen as far as roster battles, but as far as what the other divisions have done, it's going to be very difficult. And I think we'd agree that you never want to say never, but if the Jets want to have a hope of making the playoffs, a lot of things are going to have to happen. Starting in goal, Andrei Pavlik's going to have to be better. He just has to be.
Talk about Michael Hutchinson, because he signed this week as well. The Jets signed him to a two-year, $1.15 million contract. The first year is a two-way contract, meaning he can be sent back to the St. John's Ice Caps, but he does have to go through waivers to get there because of his age and his first contract that was signed when he was 20 years old and things of that nature. And then the second year is a guaranteed one-way contract in the NHL. So, you know, how does the Michael Hutchinson, you know, factor, you know, how does that relate to Andrei Pavlik and the need for Pavlik to be better? Do you think Hutchinson's going to be the backup on this team?
Absolutely. And the way Michael Hutchinson was playing for the St. John's Ice Caps towards the end of the regular season and into the playoffs, the writing was on the wall that Al Montoya wasn't going to be re-signed. And that's not Al Montoya's fault at all, because I thought he did a very good job over the last couple of years as a backup to Andrei Pavlik. But Michael Hutchinson's younger, he's cheaper, and at this point, there's more of a chance that he can push Pavlik, really. Now, I think the big question, and I think we had a poll on illegalcurve.com about this, you know, did we think that already Michael Hutchinson has a chance to be the number one goalie? Now, it's way too early to begin, because as Chevy said, Andrei Pavlik, due to his contract and the amount of games he's played for the team over the past few years, he's obviously still the number one goalie. But Michael Hutchinson, he did everything right. I mean, the guy in the conference call when he was signed, he was saying he didn't even know who he was going to be playing with at the beginning of this year, and he was looking for an opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. And all he did was, when he was asked to be the number one goalie in St. John's, he did an excellent job, and he was the MVP of this team that was a few wins away from winning the Calder Cup. So I like the signing, but again, you know, if this team wants to be competitive, there's going to have to be competition, and there's going to have to be players pushing to get into the lineup, and players that aren't performing, these guys can't be in the lineup anymore, and you have to move on. If players, and we saw James Wright not come back and Matt Halastuk not come back, they're not putting up the type of numbers offensively because they also have other qualities. James Wright was an excellent penalty killer, but guys, you're talking about core players of this team that have to be better. You're talking about Zach Bogosian. You're talking about Evander Kane. These are keys to the team, in my opinion. You can't fault Blake Wheeler. He had an excellent season, and he should be getting an A on his jersey. He really became a leader of this team. Brian Little had an excellent year. Mark Scheifele had a great rookie year. You're talking about, to me, players that have to step up their games and become top-line players. And basically,
good luck with that.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I mean, they're all going to become the player that you think they are right away at the same time. It never happens. You know how it works, Ezzy. I mean, if you go into a season with if not all ifs come to fruition, that's just the end of the day what it is. And I understand your point. And I agree with your point. You need everybody to step up at the same time to make up for the roster deficiencies.
Right. And it's pretty clear that...
They've had a third-line left winger in 3 years.
And it's pretty clear that the lack of moves that were made in free agency, and I'm talking about, sure, they've re-signed Party, and he'll be a bottom-pairing defenseman, extra defenseman, just like he was this past year. And you re-sign Hutchinson and decide not to bring Montoya back. And I like those moves, both of those moves, no problem. And Thorpe's we talked about, and re-signing Mathieu Perreault. But there aren't any other moves, which to me indicates that you're still going with the basic core group of this team. Sure, Ole Jokinen,
a core group that hasn't been good enough for the past 3 years.
Right. And if that, unless that core group, and we're talking, unless Evander Kane scores and stays healthy, he's got to stay healthy. Bogo and Kane have to stay healthy. I mean, it's they can't have 40 or 50 games each from those guys. They're too important to this team. So unless those guys turn it up, and we're talking on both sides of the puck, to me, that's the thing I'll be watching on this team the most. Do those two players improve under a full season of Paul Maurice? If they do take significant steps, the Jets have a chance at making the playoffs. If they don't, because of the division they're in, every team got better. Every single team in the Central Division got better. It's tough, and I don't mean to sound pessimistic for Jets fans. I want the Jets to make the playoffs and do just as well as the next Jets fan, but they happen to be in the best division in the league. And we're not talking... I think that this division is way better than every single other division, and... The California division's not too bad either, is it?
No, it's not. That's the problem.
Another thing quickly before we go to break is does anybody ever sign Jets players?
Ole Jokinen.
I know 1 year. I mean, Montoya got 2 years. I don't know why, but we'll talk about that later. But the point is, if you don't notice, the Anthropos and all these guys, they all hit the wire after the Jets have had them. Nobody wants them.
Yeah. They want them at best for 1 year deals. Yeah.
I don't want to...
Where's Setoguchi?
I don't want to... I mean, Anthropov did come over from Atlanta, though.
No, I'm saying, like, but they had him at the end of the contract. They let him go for, like,
yeah.
The point is
nobody
wants these players. Yeah. So, like, that's a big sign for me.
Yeah.
Is if the guys are done the contracts and nobody rushes to sign them, that's how they value your players on the team. So, were you overvaluing them on your team? I don't know. But hey, anytime a Jet guy hits free agency, nobody's racing.
Same with the trade deadline. All those guys had for sale signs on them at the trade deadline and nobody was running to get them. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we are going to shift our focus to the rest of the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Keith Alberstad is in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And in case you missed it, coming up in September, Broken Lizard, coming to Rumors.
Farva.
Yes, exactly.
What's his real name?
I have no idea.
Well, you're on the site.
Kevin and Steve. That's what
Which
I know about.
Kevin? Which one's
Kevin? Kevin Heffernan is Farva.
Farva, yeah.
And Steve Lemmy is Mac from Super Troopers and Finkelstein in Beer Fest. So those guys are coming to Rumors September 11th through September 13th.
I will guarantee that I will be there. Because those movies are hilarious.
Wasn't Beer Fest? Wasn't that your autobiography? Is that the name?
Beer Fest was great. Remember, there was Club Dread.
Yeah, Club Dread.
Super Troopers. One that I actually think I watched with Sean Asor, who's in the studio right now of TSN 1290. There was Slam and Salmon. Remember that one?
I don't.
That was what it wasn't that as popular as the other ones, but they've had
don't
like
you have
five
to eat
or
6 ounces of salmon every morning.
Yeah, as part of your new
part of your diet.
I'm pumped up about that to see those guys at Rumors because those guys have like five or six hilarious movies.
Yeah, exactly. So check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, moving to the Central Division, the rest of the Central Division. Let's start. We'll start with the Dallas Stars because they probably made the biggest splash, not through free agency necessarily, but acquiring Jason Spezza from the Ottawa Senators in exchange for a number of prospects. The most well-known one is Alex Chason, who played last year with the Stars for the majority of the year. They also dipped into free agency, signing Alex Hemsky, also away from the Ottawa Senators, where he finished last season. Your thoughts on Dallas's moves, acquiring Spezza and Hemsky?
Well, what's not to like? I mean, you're adding a top 30 skilled center for sure, a guy who makes his teammates better, a guy who's developed chemistry with Hemsky in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. You bring both of them over, you give up. Chason's a good player. I mean, you know, he's good on the boards. He's a big guy. He's got good hands. Not very fast. That's kind of a, you know, that's his crutch. But he's a good player, and he came along quite well last year. But at the end of the day, I mean, you're giving up a guy who can play in your top six as your second line right winger, you hope, to giving up to getting a guy who's a top center in the National Hockey League and who makes his teammates better and is a great passer. He has a really good shot, though he doesn't shoot a ton. And you take the pressure off a guy who sometimes feels it too much, and you put him behind Tyler Seguin. That's the slotting. You're going to put him behind Tyler Seguin. You have two dynamite centers now, right-handed shooting guys, which aren't the easiest to find, and you've made your team better by really not making it much worse. And you bring in Lindback, who some people, you know, obviously expectations were high for him before, Anders Lindback.
Yeah.
Not great, but you're going to go with Lettinen.
Yeah, Lindback coming in as a backup goalie, 1 year, $925,000.
And you re-sign Vernon Fiddler, who's a good checker and a face-off guy and PK and all that.
He's your fourth line center.
Yeah, he's good. I like him. And you don't really lose much. I mean, what don't you like about what Jim Neal does in Dallas? Well, what's not to like? He identifies needs. He addresses them.
Well, in a league where it's supposedly impossible to get, you know, centermen, top flight centermen, in the last two summers, he's acquired Tyler Seguin and Jason Spezza.
Mm-hmm.
Not too shabby.
I would agree. And we were just, of course, in the draft in Philadelphia, and Richie and I were on the bus. We happened to be on the bus with Jim Neal. I kind of elbowed Richie and you know, said Jim Neal was on the bus. You know, I was going to ask him for his autograph. No, I'm just kidding. But no, we were talking about Jim Neal after, you know, the bus ride, and we were talking about how he's turned that team around. The Dallas Stars were a team that was going nowhere, and they were a team that were missing the playoffs year after year. And now you've got Tyler Seguin and Jason Spezza 1-2 down the middle. I agree with Richie. They're you can't find anything not to like about these moves. And we saw how good a couple of Winnipeg boys did there last year, Cody Eakin and Ryan Garbutt.
I mean, Eakin's your third line center, which
third
is
third line
better.
Center. And he was a little bit miscast as a second line center there. You know, you get Jason Spezza for Alex Chason, 23 years old, played his first full season in the NHL last year, did pretty well with Dallas last year, but he's a guy that the Ottawa Senators are looking at as someone that they can grow. He's a bit of a late bloomer. He took a few years in the AHL, but he's starting to come into his own at 23 years old. And then they give up a couple of B prospects in Alexander Guptill and Nicholas Paul, and then the draft pick. But and you know, Lindback is obviously an upgrade over Tim Thomas, who's, I don't think we'd expect him to be back in the NHL this year. He wasn't very good as a backup for the Dallas Stars last year, even though he came in with I guess, low expectations for most of us here. But the Dallas Stars, another team that they didn't have high expectations. Them making the playoffs last year was a big deal for them. And now Jim Neal with the Detroit Red Wings, formerly of the Western Conference, he's looking at this division and he's saying, well, if we have a legitimate shot here going down a few years from now, I still think the Dallas Stars are a few pieces away. I don't think they're Stanley Cup contenders.
Their D's not good.
Their defense, last year we kind of saw several weaknesses, especially when Robida went to Anaheim. Now Robida's on the Leafs. But you look at the Dallas Stars, and they were already a competitive team. I know Richie has been a big fan of the Ben Seguin and the Nichushkin line. I mean, there's a lot of skill on that team. They're solid in goal. Kari Lehtinen, after having years of injury problems, has really reemerged as a top, at least 15, maybe even top 10 goalie in the NHL. He gives them a chance to win every night. Mm-hmm. And the Dallas Stars are looking good. I think they're one of the big winners as far as trades and the free agency period goes.
And we'll do winners and losers at the end of the show, just before the 3 o'clock hour, of course.
Yeah, Ezzy asked me what his chances were of getting Jim Neal's autograph. I said they were nil.
Very clever. Moving to St. Louis, the St. Louis Blues also dipped into free agency. They acquired Paul Stastny. To some people, he was the number one free agent available, signing him to a four-year, $28 million contract. Also made a small trade, acquiring Carl Gunnarsson and a fourth-round pick from the Toronto Maple Leafs in exchange for Roman Polak. Stastny to St. Louis, does this, I mean, we keep saying it year after year, what's going to put them over the top? What's going to make them defeat the Chicago Blackhawks and become one of the, you know, get into the Western, deep into the Western Conference playoffs? Is this signing, you know, a difference maker in terms of a move?
It's a difficult question. Now Paul Stastny has came off of a long-term contract making $6.6 a year, I believe, and never lived up to that contract. And he's never been the fleetest of foot. He's not your typical natural goal scorer. He's a very good passer. He sees the ice really well. I think he had some off-ice problems that I think he's addressed. And I think that certainly helped him last year. Now, last year he played with a boatload of talented forwards in Colorado in a contract year. Did he blow your socks off in terms of his production? I mean, Drew, you can cite the stats. Did he blow the socks off? I just don't think.
25 goals, 35 assists, 60 points in 71 games.
And he gets $7 million a year for 4 years. 4 years doesn't bother me. $7 million a year is too much. But based on, you know, who else was available and the needs that they have a needed center for, you know, I don't think Patrick Berglund is going to be your Stanley Cup winning second line center. David Backes, for all of his skill, you're going to match him up to more of a Ryan Kessler-esque player who we've seen slotted on Vancouver and on Anaheim now as a second line guy. So you move Backes down. But is Stastny good enough to compete with Kopitar, Getzlaff? You know, and you can talk about whether you want to put Couture and Thornton or those guys in the list. Can he compete with those guys? Taves, not in my mind. So you've addressed a need by overpaying, and you've gotten better. But then you look at the goaltending. Brian Elliott's not good enough to win a cup, in my opinion. And we don't know about Jake Allen. Is he the best goalie not in the NHL? I thought that was John Gibson. I thought that was going to be Jack Campbell. I mean, who knows? So are you that confident now in that team? I know that team will be good in the regular season unless Hitchcock finally wears on them too much. But I don't know if they're over the top still. I'm not sold. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I like the Paul Stastny signing. I guess you can look at it from the salary perspective or from the non-salary perspective. I think he's a little bit overpaid. And there were obviously other teams, Richie, that wanted Paul Stastny. We don't know how many there are. We're told, you know, there were four teams that were serious about him. There could have been 10 teams that were
60 points in 71 games, and everybody's clamoring to get the guy. I don't get it.
Right. And
free agency makes people do silly things.
When you talk about last year and the struggles that they had again to get over the hump, it's the same issue with this team. Are they going to have enough game breakers to beat a team like the Chicago Blackhawks? Are they going to have enough game breakers to beat a team like the LA Kings? They don't have as good of goaltending, I think, as either of those teams. And look at Jake Allen, and I think it was quite clear when they parted ways with Halak that Jake Allen was going to be the either 1A, 1B, or 2 goalie. I think what you're going to see as far as the goaltending goes is you're going to see two guys competing for the top spot the entire year. So I think you might start the season with Brian Elliott, and whoever's playing better, you go with, because Jake Allen is 21, 22
that's
years
great.
Old.
Brian Allen, I don't trust Brian Elliott in any playoff series.
St. Louis is going to be fine in the regular season. The question is, do they have enough come the playoffs? And of course, they can make other changes between now and then. But they're still going to be one of the best teams in the Central Division for the playoffs.
And he doesn't make them any faster.
For the regular season.
He doesn't make them any faster.
One more team in the Central, and then we'll go to break and we'll come back and do
quickly,
the rest.
Well, quickly, we should do Gunnarsson and Polak.
Okay, let's do Gunnarsson and
Polak. Polak was a slower guy, right side 6D, 5-6D. They have dressed, they do get faster there with Gunnarsson puck moving. They want to get a little faster in the back end. They want to stress the puck out of their own zone. Maybe especially with the goaltending deficiency now, they want to focus on that. I thought that was a solid trade. I actually like that trade for both teams.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, Gunnarsson struggled at times. He was asked to be the number one pairing guy in Toronto. And Roman Polak, not the fastest guy, but in the Western Conference, he's the type of guy, physical defenseman. He's very responsible defensively. So that move, I looked at that and I was kind of like, you know, this is a trade that kind of makes sense for both teams. A guy like Gunnarsson's obviously not going to play as much in St. Louis with Petrangelo, I should say, and Bomeister and Shattenkirk. So it made sense. So you look at the St. Louis Blues, and again, I think I agree with you, Drew. I mean, the St. Louis Blues are going to be at the top of the division. It's going to be St. Louis, Chicago, Colorado, again, maybe even Minnesota competes this year.
Yeah.
But when it gets down to the playoffs, our players, and it's not, it doesn't just come to one or down to one or two guys. Hockey's a team game, and it comes down to the same things. Our guys like Alex Steen from Winnipeg obviously had a great regular season last year. Our Jaden Schwartz, our TJ Oshie, are they going to step up? Are they going to be game breakers? Are they going to get the goals when they need to? And it's tough to say. Is Stastny going to be the game breaker that helps them out? I think he helps them.
He makes them better. Yeah.
But I don't know if it makes them good enough to get past the promised land, which is the Western Conference Finals and hopefully to the Stanley Cup Final.
And I think Gunnarsson likely plays probably alongside Shattenkirk. That's what I would guess right now, though I don't know what they're going to do. You will see combinations. I personally believe that Kevin Shattenkirk is one of the more overrated defensemen in the National Hockey League.
Overrated?
Yeah, I do. That's what I think.
Okay. Well, we'll talk more about that comment as we get closer to the season and throughout the offseason. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll do the rest of the Central Division, and then we'll look at the Pacific Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. At Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website, of course, is IllegalCurve.com.
We're having issues with the feed online. I just got an email from a listener, Bill, and in North Kildonan, and I know that was speaking to my mom and a couple other people. The connection online is out, so okay. We're trying to work to fix that.
We'll come down to the studio and come right in here.
Live studio audience.
Come to the back door. I'll let you in. We could probably fit about, 100 people in here?
Yeah, probably.
About 100 guys?
Yeah, sure.
And girls, hopefully.
Well,
not just girls.
In any event,
guys. Girls and guys.
If we're not able to get the feed up in time, podcast version of the show will be available right after the conclusion of the show, so about 15 or so minutes following the end of the show. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download, so you can listen to it that way.
Remus is here with the burrito.
Yeah, Remus and the burrito are here. They're cuddling in the other room.
Kind of a hot day to eat a burrito.
I think every day is fine.
But
for
then
a
again, I got to say, it's kind of a hot day. I brought a coffee, and Drew messaged me at like 11:30. No, it was like 10:30. He's like, "Do you want a Slurpee?"
That was an early text. I was like, "Drew, I don't Slurpee." It's 12 o'clock.
Yeah. It's an hour from the show. You're already getting Slurpees. You must have had a light Saturday.
I was being nice to you guys. I thought I was doing you a favor picking up some Slurpees.
I know. Well, don't be wrong. We appreciated it, Drew.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. You guys should know, really, but more than anybody, that my generosity comes around very rarely. So you should take advantage of it when it does.
Once every 6 months.
Exactly. Let's continue on looking at the Central Division. The Nashville Predators made their biggest splash in the trade market, acquiring James Neal from the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for Patrick Hornqvist and Nick Spaulding. They also did sign Olli Jokinen to a one-year, $2.5 million contract. The thoughts on the Neal acquisition and the Predators' offseason so far?
Well, Richie, it's a good acquisition in the sense that they need to be better offensively. Mm-hmm. I'm not a James Neal fan, and I thought that he really kind of gave up or mailed it in a little bit in the playoffs this past year. And I think James Neal, we've seen, can be cheap on the ice. And I think it's pretty clear when Jim Rutherford especially took over for Ray Shiro, James Neal didn't factor into the plans in Pittsburgh.
I think that's probably based on conversations with different people in the organization. I think he kind of wore out his welcome there. I don't think he made that decision right away. I think that probably was based on some comments from
He was probably going to be out of the way, even if Shiro was still in power.
Now, James Neal, I think, will probably succeed in a Peter Laviolette offense, system, which is very offensive. He is a freewheeling guy. He lets his players do he doesn't mind giving up a goal if he can get two, put it that way. Now, James Neal is a bit of a roamer, meaning, he's a right winger who shoots left and played with Evgeny Malkin. And that's going to be a factor is, who is he going to play with? It's certainly not going to be Olli Jokinen, who's going to play with him and set him up all the time, because Jokinen can't really pass. So you look at, is it Mike Fisher, or is it Matt Cullen, or is it Gostad, or, they have a bunch of guys who can play center, actually. Colin Wilson, well, some of those guys play wing now. But the point is, will he be able to score? The system will be conducive to scoring, but he won't have a passer to get him the puck, and James Neal, make no mistake, James Neal is going to be, it finds open space really well and gets a shot off really well. And he might still find that open space. In fact, I think he will. The problem will be whether or not somebody can get it to him. So I don't expect him to produce at the same levels he did in Pittsburgh. But I still think skill-wise, it is an upgrade over Hornquist, who is a hardworking guy. And I don't mind the trade for...
Very streaky, Richie.
Yeah, I don't mind the trade for Pittsburgh. But I think that skill-wise, Nashville wants to get better. And I think here that they do. Plus, Neil's under contract for 4 more years at $5 million. I think that's reasonable terms, especially if they eventually get a center. And we know that they were in on Jason Spezza.
That's right, and Spezza refused to trade to Nashville, which a lot of people were surprised about when we were talking to them at the draft.
Things worked out well for him, but I don't like the fact that he demands a trade and then uses his no-trade clause to basically say where he's going.
Especially Nashville, which for a lot of people is a desired destination because there's a lot of fun can be had in Nashville. Let's leave it at that. Moving to Colorado, the Colorado Avalanche made their big splash in free agency, signing Jerome Iginla to a 3-year, $16 million deal, an average annual value salary cap hit of $5.3 million. They also signed former Winnipeg Jets defenseman Zach Redmond to a 2-year, $1.5 million deal. Also made a couple trades. They acquire Brad Stewart from the San Jose Sharks defenseman, and then they also acquire Danny Briere from the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for P.A. Parenteau. You know, the Avalanche were sort of the darling teams last year, because they came out of nowhere. They lose Paul Stastny, but they add Stewart, Briere, and Iginla. Are they better than they were last year?
I think so. And I think so because they have so much depth at center. Deshane, MacKinnon, O'Reilly can all play center. So you don't need Stastny. Stastny is a luxury.
You especially don't need Stastny for $7 million a year.
You certainly don't need Stastny for $7 million a year. Plus, the pace that they want to play. I mean, Iginla's not the fastest skater by any means. When he gets going, he's all right. But he's a trigger guy in the right-handed shooter, right winger. So he changes it up a bit, right? All the guys, when we're talking about the other guys on this team, they had a lot of left-handed shooting guys. So it changes it up. He gets another right-handed shot in there. He's a sniper, and they have a bunch of guys who can pass on the wing, and he makes them bigger, too. They're more of a skilled team, beat you off the rush. He can cycle the puck. He can push you around on the boards a bit. And he's not going to get in as quickly on the forecheck, but the point is, you look at their top six, and it's Deshane, MacKinnon, Landeskog, Iginla, O'Reilly. I mean, pretty good.
Yeah.
And then you talk about guys, people forget that Alex Tanguay is still there. Great passer. I know he's injured last year, but a really good passer. Sees the ice well. And they bring back Jamie McGinn. They add in Briere. Briere for Parenteau, I think, is actually probably a production drop-off in terms of, where they're at in their careers. Briere's really fallen off. Parenteau just doesn't have a great attitude, but can snipe the puck a bit. But Briere's brought in to kind of see, he's only got 1 more year left in his deal. They want to get rid of Parenteau. He solidifies, even the fourth line probably is where he's going to play. He's a veteran influence for younger guys. He's always been pretty good in the playoffs. And then they add in Brad Stewart, need to address the defense, right? Eric Johnson there, Jan Hayda, Tyson Barrie. You want to address the left side. Brad Stewart has won before. He's played on almost all winning teams. I mean, he went to the final with Calgary, played in Detroit, played on San Jose, played on Boston. Although Boston wasn't great then. Moves the puck well. Still doesn't maybe skate as well as he once did, but still skates pretty well. Smart defenseman. I like what they've done. Even if they lose Stastny, I actually like that they don't overpay Stastny, and then they do make these moves.
These moves mean the Avalanche are going for it next year. That's what these moves mean. I mean, they're bringing in Jerome Iginla, and I was a little bit surprised that he was given a 3-year contract.
Keeps himself in such good shape, though.
Yeah, he does. I'm not saying that he can't play 3 years in the NHL. I'm just saying I was expecting maybe max 2 years, even a 1-year deal, and then if he likes playing in Colorado, they give him another year. But Jerome Iginla, I mean, he still has productive years left in him. I don't think he's going to score 50 goals and 90 points like he did 12 years ago or so ago. But I think this shows that by bringing in Brad Stewart, who was still an integral part of the San Jose Sharks defense last year, and Richie mentioned he's lost a step too, but Brad Stewart is big and he can still move the puck and he's still solid defensively. And Danny Briere, we saw what he did last year for the Montreal Canadiens on the fourth line. And Briere, I imagine, will spend the majority of his time on the bottom two lines if you need him maybe once in a while. But Briere at this point in his career is a guy that's going to play in your bottom six. I think Joe Sakic has shown the team. Paul Stastny, I don't think anybody was expecting him to come back. We thought he might be traded before the trade deadline. That never happened. And they decided to keep him for the playoff run. But I think that these moves show that Joe Sakic and Greg Sherman and the Avalanche are committed to winning it this year. As we know, I don't think anybody expected them to win the division.
Minnesota Wild made sort of the move that everybody had been expecting for since last offseason, that's signing Thomas Vanek to a 3-year, $19.5 million contract, salary cap hit of $6.5 million a year. They subtract from their roster, losing Clayton Stoner to Anaheim and Cody McCormick and Matt Molson, both of whom they acquired from Buffalo, go back to Buffalo in free agency. You know, does Vanek, you know, what does Vanek do for the Minnesota Wild?
Well, go ahead, Izzy.
He gives them an excellent sniper on the wings, obviously. And Thomas Vanek, I don't think there's any surprise here because of his connections to the state of Minnesota. I think we were hearing about this for a long time. And I guess the way he played in Montreal, Richie, in the playoffs, they were calling him Thomas Vanish. And he wasn't very productive.
He was terrible.
For this team.
He was an embarrassment.
He wasn't good. And so for the Minnesota Wild, they obviously get another score. And the thing with the Minnesota Wild that I love about this team is that it's a team that keeps getting better and better and better. And Ryan Suter, I was really shocked that he wasn't a Norris candidate last year, because he is just unbelievable in the amount of minutes that he plays for this team. But you know, it's a big signing for the Minnesota Wild, and you know, you don't bring back Matt Molson who goes back to Buffalo. But to me, Thomas Vanek, it's a bit of a wash there. They're both players that have, and obviously their names are going to be linked forever because of the Islanders and the Buffalo and that whole trade. But the Minnesota Wild get a top offensive player. Now, to me, he's still going to have to fit in with the Minnesota Wild system, and that Minnesota Wild system is still kind of defensive. And you talked about this quite a bit throughout the year, Richie, with Mike Yeo and how he's kind of taking a team that has tons of offensive skill in Michael Granlund and Charlie Coyle and Parise, and he's kind of turned them into almost the old Jacques Lemaire Minnesota Wild, and that's probably not conducive. I think he's probably got to open it up quite a bit this year. But Vanek, you know what you're going to get? You're going to get a player who's lazy defensively. He's a great offensive player, but he has his deficiencies.
He's not the fastest guy. He's not the most physical guy. He's not very good defensively. But he can do one thing really well, that's score. He can pass the puck pretty well, too. I assume he sets up on the left side here in Minnesota, which is where Parise plays. So Parise will play number one line. Vanek will play number two. That takes pressure off of him. He fits in here as a second line guy. The expectations are not what they were in Montreal, and not what they were in New York, and not what they were in Buffalo. I think that helps him. He's below on the total. He's below Koivu, Parise, Suter on the totem pole for sure. Pressure. He's a fourth guy, fifth guy, sixth guy anybody goes to in the locker room for a quote. Helps him. 3 years, it's not that risky. 6.5 will probably be commensurate with the production, you know, with the overall production that you get from him over the course of the contract, if not even value if he really breaks out. Does it address the Wild's actual needs, though? Not good enough on defense still. Still some questions in net. So, you know, you lose Molson, you add Vanek. It's a little bit of a skill, I think, advantage there. You know, a skill. You've bettered yourself skill-wise a little bit. And I like the young players. I mean, if you look, you try and project their lines out. Say Palmenvo plays first-line right wing with Koivu and Parise. Then you play Vanek with Granlund and Coyle, maybe. That's your second line. And the fact that Vanek isn't fast isn't an issue because Eric Halla can skate and Parise can skate and Coyle, all these guys can skate. Granlund, they can all get around the ice really well. So that's not going to be an issue. And, you know, Niederreiter's kind of carved out a nice niche for himself. Jason Zucker has skill. They have a lot of young skill. But I don't think they're good enough on defense right now. And I still have some questions about goaltending. So I think they probably maybe will get better on offense as much with internal growth than anything else.
Yeah, Ryan Suter can't play 45 minutes a game. He can play 35 minutes a game, but they have to pick up the slack for him.
The last team in the Central Division very quickly, the Chicago Blackhawks, didn't do much. They traded away Brandon Bolig to Calgary in exchange for a third-round pick, and they signed Brad Richards to a one-year, $2 million contract.
Well, you put Brad Richards between Patrick Kane and Brandon Saad, and he'll be fine. And he's not the fastest skater, can't keep up, really. Can play some power play, although he didn't flourish there in the playoffs. There's no risk. It's 1 year, $2 million deal. I love it. If it doesn't work, fine. They had Hanzus there part of last season. He's certainly better than Hanzus. So I like the move. Only championship teams really can make these moves because nobody else wants to go there unless they know they're going to have a great chance to win a cup.
Right. You mentioned Michael Hanzus, who ideally you want as a fourth line center, and tried Marcus Krug, and they even tried Brandon Saad. He's better suited as a winger, Richie. I agree. It's a 1 year deal. I love it. And how great does this turn out for Brad Richards? Right. He gets a compliance buyout from the New York Rangers, and then he gets to go to a team that was one win away from going back to the Stanley Cup Finals. So it works perfectly, and he adds a veteran presence. Mm-hmm. I really like that move. They only made one major move, but let's be honest, guys, this was the only move they had to make. This is still a team that has an excellent defense, and as you know, Richie, the big signings for the Chicago Blackhawks are locking up Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews long term. You know, we're hearing 8 years, $12 million each. So love that move. I like what the Hawks did.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll head to the Pacific Division and recap their moves. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Drew, I'm trying to figure out who schvitz more in the studio right now, Richie, you or me.
That's like a really awkward question.
Well, it's not that hot. It's hot outside. It's hot in here.
I don't find it that hot in here, to be perfectly honest.
I was going
to
wear a bathing suit in here.
It's not hot in here.
Yeah, there's also a fan right behind you could turn on if you want.
Yeah, but it's distracting. Tim doesn't like it.
That's Rick Ralph's personal fan. You can't touch it.
Oh, sorry.
It actually says Rick's fan on it.
The Anaheim Ducks, let's start with the Pacific Division. They made a big splash in both trade and free agency, acquiring Ryan Kesler from the Vancouver Canucks. That was the biggest of the moves in exchange for Nick Bonino, Lucas Spezza, and a first-round pick. They also acquired Nate Thompson from the Tampa Bay Lightning. In terms of signings, they get Clayton Stoner on defense for 4 years and $13 million. $3.25 million is the average annual value. There. Free agency, they lose Matthew Perreault to the Jets, Jonas Hiller to the Calgary Flames, and Stefan Robida to the Toronto Maple Leafs. We know that Kesler fills a very big need there in terms of second line center. What does Clayton Stoner do on the back end for Anaheim?
The Ducks always kind of like these guys, you know, more their stay at home, kind of tougher defensemen, and he kind of reminds me of a bit of current Duck Brian Allen. So, I mean, in that sense, I don't love Clayton Stoner as a player, so I'm not going to come out here and say that I do, but they always seem to like having kind of the rock-solid guys on the back end, so it's not a cost-prohibitive move, $3.25 a year for the next 4 years. And you have to note that Sheldon Surrey, Francois Beauchemin, and Brian Allen all up after this season.
Right, and I think that we'd all agree, Richie, the future of the defense is Sammy Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm, both guys that ended up playing last year. Hampus Lindholm actually ended up playing more of a prominent role. Clayton Stoner is a very solid defenseman. He's not going to give you a ton of offense, and I thought he did a pretty good job playing in the bottom pairing for the Minnesota Wild behind Jared Spurgeon and Marco Scandella, but he's very solid. He can mix it up a little bit and play the physical game, but the big move was obviously acquiring Ryan Kesler, and now they're formidable down the middle. We talked about the Chicago Blackhawks, Richie, and how they desperately needed someone to come in who was a legitimate second-line center. Chicago Blackhawks did pretty well winning the Stanley Cup a couple years ago without a legitimate second-line center, but you know, there are obviously issues that I know, Richie, you've brought up last week about can Kesler and Getzlaff get along in that room? Because as we know, Kesler has had some issues getting along with players, and he's got a type A personality, guys. But I love the Kesler move, and you know, they have a lot of good players coming up through the system. Emerson Edom, Devontae Smith-Pelly, Ricard Raquel. They have young players. We saw Devontae Smith-Pelly come in last year and do a fantastic job. Cogliano is now better suited to play that third line role for the Anaheim Ducks, but now they're solid up the middle. And again, the two teams that I think that not much has changed as far as the two teams to beat in the West, and it's still Chicago and LA, and the Anaheim Ducks are going to have to be better defensively, and they're going to have to get more timely goaltending. And that's really what it is for me with the Anaheim Ducks. But Kesler, it's an obvious upgrade.
I mean, this team isn't without questions, right, guys? I mean, you have Frederik Andersen, and obviously you're going to be relying on John Gibson, but, you know, youngster, you're never really for sure on that guy. I'm not saying Hiller was a shoe-in by any means. You kind of have a mix on defense of Fowler, Lovejoy, Lindholm, Batten, and guys who can move the puck, and then you're kind of your stay-at-home guys who I just mentioned before, including Mark Fistrich. So they like that mix. Bob Murray, we know, likes that mix, has liked it for some time. There may be some questions, and as he mentions, the young players, and you know, what Silverberg do and Smith-Pelly, they're going to rely on those guys to provide depth scoring. I think that's a key for next year. It's how do the youth provide depth scoring? Remember, Ryan Kessler's injury prone. Mm-hmm. They lose Ryan Kessler. That hole in the middle is significant again. And one thing we should know, because we have to go on to the next team here, Nate Thompson, on a team last year that was 13th overall in the National Hockey League in penalty kill percentage. I quite like what Nate Thompson does on the penalty kill. He works hard. He can pressure the puck. He's willing to sacrifice his body. I like that move in terms of addressing the penalty kill.
They got Nate Thompson from Tampa for a 4th and a 7th round pick, so certainly not a big price to pay.
And he was a key player for the Lightning. He was on there for several years.
Moving to Calgary, Calgary made 3 signings. They signed Jonas Hiller, ex of Anaheim, to a 2-year, $9 million contract. He's going to be their starting goaltender. Mason Raymond goes from Toronto to Calgary, 3 years, $9.5 million.
He's a Calgary native.
He's a Calgary native. And in probably one of the more puzzling signings of the entire free agency so far, Derek Englund gets 3 years and $8.7 million, $2.9 million per year for Derek Englund, who can, he's sort of a tweener. He can play some D, he can play some forward. The Flames also acquire Brandon Bolig from the Blackhawks and lose Mike Camilleri in free agency to New Jersey. That's their biggest loss in terms of free agency.
Well, first off, Englund's a defenseman. He can play forward, but he's a defenseman. He's improved a lot, actually, but he's not a guy that really factors into the future for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's a guy that he fights a lot, and he was in and out of the lineup. But the
Pittsburgh, by the way, that does not have a lot of defense. But doesn't, I mean, they have defense, but prospects. But he had his chance the past few years, as he to crack that defense on a regular basis and make a difference, and did not do that.
Right. And you look at the Calgary Flames, and they bring in Jonas Hiller-Richie, and they pay him a fair amount of money, $4.5 million.
Yep.
But last year with Rito Berra and Kari Ramo, and the Calgary Flames, let's not forget that this is a team that isn't making the playoffs this year. And I think a lot of people in Calgary aren't expecting them to make the playoffs. They're trying to be competitive. So they're bringing in Jonas Hiller, a guy who arguably his best years are behind him. But they're bringing in a guy that can help them be respectable and give them a chance to win. I think it's an upgrade over Ramo and Berra.
Well,
Berra's a backup. Ramo really at his stage of his career has been given the chance back with Tampa Bay, and he hasn't cracked the lineup. Mason Raymond, again, you need roster players. You need guys to play in the NHL. You have a team that has a lot of, you know, you look at what Sean Monahan did last year, and Berchi had to be sent down to the AHL, but you need players that can play in the NHL right now. And last year, their roster was really a mishmash of players that really would be top-line guys in the AHL, but not a lot of guys that can play at a high level in the NHL and score enough goals for you to be competitive on a regular basis.
You're biding time. Mason Raymond is the third highest-paid player on a forward on the team, for God's sake, behind David Jones and Yuri Hudler. I'm sure they'd probably move if they could. And we heard he was in discussions. I'm not sure if there was any truth to it. But Raymond wants to be there because he's from Calgary. It's a 3-year deal. He's overpaid, but it's a 3-year deal. It's not going to kill you. And by the time you're probably any good, you'll see if whether or not you still want to have him there. And he's from there. He'll obviously, he's got his roots there.
They still have to get to the floor. They're not even there yet. They still have about another $600,000 to get to the floor.
And they will get there.
Yeah, of course they will.
But the point is when you look at this roster in England too, they're trying to fill out their roster with guys who either want to be there or are tough and will make sure they take care of the young players. And Jonas Hiller, as you mentioned, being respectable. I like the fact that they signed Hiller because on a rebuilding team, young players make mistakes. And who covers up mistakes better than anyone? The goaltender. And if you're going to develop young guys and try and keep their confidence, the best thing to do is have a veteran netminder who can play. And the worst thing to do is have a rookie or even a veteran netminder who can't play because a mistake by a defenseman or a center, whatever it may be, with a bad goaltender, more goals will be in the net. Less confidence in that player. Better goaltending means more confidence.
We continue team by team, division by division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290.
You know, Drew, we should talk about the fact that you had to tough it out last week in Philadelphia and share a hotel room not a bed. There was two separate beds, right?
No.
It was one bed.
It was one bed.
Oh, I forgot there was one bed. It's a share, not only a hotel room with Ezra Ginsberg, but a bed.
It was a king-size bed, if you know, if that's any consolation.
Was there pillows in the middle?
They were initially set up as a try and make a little fort as well.
And so I just want our listeners to know, while Ezzy's
not in the room
for a second, luckily we can play this. Let listeners know what it's like to sleep in a room, never mind a bed, in a room with Mr. Ezra Ginsberg.
Again, this is not altered in any way, shape, or form.
Dave Manuka of LegalCurve.com taped this and recorded it for the show. How do you sleep in a room with that?
Well, the first night, I went to bed before Ezzy was back in the room, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll go to sleep, and I won't be woken up by that. I'll be asleep by the time he gets back. Well, that woke me up immediately. I didn't sleep that entire night. I jammed my headphones into my ear and played music as loud as I humanly possibly could, and it still didn't work. The other nights I slept with earplugs, and I was able to get a couple hours of sleep. But, I mean, Dave and I need to start a support group. It's just horrendous. It's just absolutely horrendous.
Next team.
The Edmonton Oilers are the next team on the list. They made two big free agent signings. Three, really. Nikita Nikitin goes from Edmonton to Columbus. 2 years, $9 million. Mark Fain, defenseman, goes from Edmonton, from New Jersey to Edmonton. 4 years, $14 million. And then Benoit Pouliot goes from New York to Edmonton, 5 years, $20 million. They also acquired Teddy Purcell from Tampa Bay in exchange for Sam Gagner. You know, what do you think about the Oilers' moves? I mean, every year it's, you know, the laughing stock in the NHL. What do these moves do to the Oilers' roster?
Well, you know, Drew, I mean, I don't know how Benoit Pouliot gets a five-year deal. I do not understand how Benoit Pouliot, who has skill, plays 40 games out of 80 if he's healthy, like actually shows up in 40 out of 80,
yeah,
tries sometimes selfish moves, takes selfish penalties, how he goes from being a one year contract kind of guy around the National Hockey League to 5 years. I don't get that at all. He's bigger, but I mean, I don't think he plays that big, huge, tough game. You're adding Teddy Purcell for Gagner. I mean, you're adding a winger, a guy who has some skill, who's really worked hard on his skating over time, but is not really a natural skater. Now, Oilers are pretty fast. They can probably make up for it. Not the toughest guy either. I mean, their offense overall, they have a ton of skill, but it's still an odd mix. I mean, Purcell isn't going to be the kind of guy to mix it up, and neither really is Pouliot at the end of the day. So I'm not sure your size and control of the boards in the offensive zone is really going to be there. You look at the back end, I mean, Nikitin overpaid, but again, 2 years, and now taking into account this free agent's contracts, 2 years, you can deal with it, but he is overpaid at 4.5. And then Mark Fain, I know people numbers-wise really like him. I don't love Mark Fain, and my concern is this. If I'm Lou Lamoriello, a pretty astute hockey mind, I have a poor defense, as you follow the Devils closer than I do. I have a poor defense. I need defensemen. I have a defenseman under my nose, and I've had him for some time. And he gets offered this kind of a contract, and I have no really interest in giving him that kind of money. That is a bit of a red flag to me.
My opinion on the moves are not much different than Richie's opinions on the moves. They're puzzling, and this is a team that was one of the worst teams in the NHL last year. And they're a team that's still very young, and they've got an excellent top line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Jordan Eberle, and Taylor Hall. They're still an up-and-coming team, but this is still a team that needs a second-line center. They need a better second-line center, and they need a number one defenseman. Yep. And Andrew Ferentz came over.
And number two defenseman.
and a number two defenseman. They need to be better.
And number three defenseman.
Right, and you look at the Edmonton Oilers, and are they going to win a lot more hockey games than they did last year? I don't know the answer to that. I think they might be right around where they were this year. I'm kind of puzzled as to where this team is going here. Like, where is this team going? Who are they building the team around? Who do they view as big parts of the future? And who do they view as stopgaps? And
Benoit Pouliot's a big part of the future because you signed him for 5 years.
Benoit Pouliot, and if you ask anybody that has followed his career, he was a prospect that was highly regarded. But if you look at his career, streaky scorer, mm-hmm. he's not physical, he's not particularly great defensively, and you give him $20 million. So I'm not so sure about that. I was expecting a guy like Benoit Pouliot to maybe at most get 3 years
and $9 million
and something around that mark. So Nikitin I like as an improvement over Anton Belov. Nikitin's not going to get a lot of points, but he's tough and he's a good solid stay at home defenseman. I don't mind that move. Sure, he gets a lot of bit of money, but you're maybe overpaying Richie because your defense was so bad last year that you need to get a guy like that. Now Mark Fain, a guy as you mentioned struggled to stay in the lineup with the New Jersey Devils, was not someone who factored into the plans long term. It's kind of a guy that is too good for the AHL level and not quite enough good for the NHL level. Teddy Purcell, I like. Teddy Purcell, from the Maritimes, he's a good scorer, and he improves your secondary scoring. And I guess more of primary scoring, but I think we'd all agree that he's most likely going to line up there on the second line.
Right.
So, I'm not sure.
What's their second line? You mentioned it, Ezzy. I want to get on to that because, you have Yakupov. If you say the first line's Hopkins, and Nugent Hopkins, Hall, and Eberle, is their second line Pouliot, somebody in Purcell, and then third line Perron, somebody and Yakupov? Again, those guys can all score. Who's playing in the middle of them? And that's Ezzy's point. Where's your second and third line centers?
They're very top heavy in Edmonton. And it's a team, again.
But yet, don't play heavy.
They don't play heavy. And this is a team, for instance, I think if you bring in even a James Neal, who, I have issues with the way he plays, but you bring in some size, a guy that'll mix it up, hit.
Dirty, even. Mind that. Don't mind that.
You need some sandpaper on this team. Because this is a team, guys, that is too small and lacks a playmaking, difference-making defenseman. Mm-hmm. And, I love Andrew Ferentz, and he did a great job with the Boston Bruins. But, on a good team at this point in his career, he's a bottom-pairing defenseman.
Right.
And, you're asking very much, again, Justin Schultz, I believe Justin Schultz hasn't signed yet.
He's an RFA, yep.
He's an RFA, and a guy that you brought in, recruited out of college, and
he
hasn't turned into anywhere close to a number one. You're in the Western Conference. You're talking about the mm-hmm. Duncan Keiths and the mm-hmm. Brent Seabrooks and the Drew Doughtys and the Jake Muzzins, and the Edmonton Oilers don't have anyone close to that. This is a team, to me, that's going to lose a lot of games again this year, and I'm still not sure if they acquired anybody that's going to help them, not just this year, but going down the road, guys. I mean, Leon Draisaitl, I like that draft pick, but he's not going to be a roster player who can significantly help you out for a couple of years. There's a chance that Draisaitl plays significantly this year, but I still don't think you can count on him to be a top six forward, can you?
I wouldn't want to be a season ticket holder there for the past 8-9 years. It's unbelievable.
In Phoenix, the Phoenix Coyotes made one really sort of larger signing. That's getting Joe Vitale out of Pittsburgh for 3 years and $3.3 million, $1.1 million salary cap hit. They also acquire, pardon me, I should say the Arizona Coyotes. They also acquire from Tampa Bay in a salary dump. They acquire Sam Gagne and BJ Crombie in exchange for a sixth-round pick. They lose Radim Verbata, and they lose Mike Ribeiro, who they chose to buy out and then run a truck over in announcing the buyout. Your thoughts on the Coyotes' moves?
Richie, sorry to cut you off there, but I think the Arizona Coyotes, unfortunately, with the new name change, things have gone downhill very quickly. I mean, Mike Ribeiro, you're talking about new ownership coming in last year, Richie, and finally they have the money to go out and sign Mike Ribeiro. And sure, Mike Ribeiro has had off-ice problems. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's read about that he had off-ice problems, personal life problems, and unfortunately they have to sever ties with him. But you're losing Radim Verbata, who was kind of your premier scorer last few years. He was scoring tons of goals. We were surprised that he didn't make the Czech Olympic team, if you guys recall, back in February. And sure, you bring in Sam Gagne, and he can score goals. We know that. And the Edmonton Oilers didn't really want to sign him and I guess I should say keep him as part of the long-term plan. But for me, this is a team that's not going to score enough goals. Sure, they can defend. They've got an excellent group of defensemen there, and Mike Smith is solid in net. But I think you lose a lot of offense there with Ribeiro and Verbata, don't you, Richie?
You do. Ribeiro, I thought he was going to help their power play and help them offensively, but we know his drawbacks, and they're significant. And and I'm talking on ice, never mind off ice. I'm talking strictly on ice. Verbata is a guy who can shoot it, and they lose. They need scoring. I mean, you have Shane Doan, who's getting up there, and then your next best scorer is Gagne or Erat or Vermette. I mean, this is not a playoff team right now.
No. Nope.
I like Joe Vitale actually as a fourth line center. I don't mind that move. I don't mind BJ Cron being aggressive. He can kill penalties. I don't mind that
He essentially, they're not, I don't believe they've signed Paul Bissonnette. So he's a fighter. He's going to replace him.
I think it's an improvement, frankly. And I don't mind that. I actually don't mind Sam Gagne, too. I mean, to try and replace what Ribeiro was doing there, obviously, for 3.2 for the next 2 years. And he didn't have much value in the market. And you lose, but you're losing skill overall, and you don't really have much skill. I don't know how much of a drop-off you'll see just because they play a good team game. And I think on defense, and as he alludes to, their solid defense, they actually have a very offensive defense. Ekman, Larson, Yandel, Schlemko, they can all move the puck. They need to be able to play better defense as a unit to give themselves a chance at the playoffs this year.
The Los Angeles Kings lose Willie Mitchell to Florida, 2 years, $8.5 million. Mm-hmm. They also trade Lyndon Vay to Vancouver for a second-round pick. Other than that, the Stanley Cup champions are pretty much returning intact. Colin Frazier still unsigned as well, and he probably isn't coming back to Los Angeles. It's good to be the Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah, I really like Lyndon Vay. He's a Saskatchewan boy. They get a second-round pick back for him, but you saw the emergence of Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson last year, and does this team really need to make a lot of moves? Honestly, and we kind of, it's similar to when the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup in 2011, another team, by the way, that didn't make very many moves. They lost a few players, but you bring back Marian Gaborik, who obviously had, 13 or 14 goals in the playoffs, big part of the reason why you were able to win your second cup in 3 years. Re-signed Trevor Lewis, a player I really like. Cracknell adds a little bit of depth and a guy that you can put on the fourth wing to replace Colin Frazier if you need to. This is a team, though, that is so solid that they can bring back the same group last year. Nobody's getting too over the hill on that team. And so I have no problem with the moves they made.
I mean, they're the best team in the league. They just won the cup. And you look at their defense and you say, okay, you got Doughty and Muzzin, who love playing together. You got Voinov, who can play with Regier. You have Martinez, who can play with Green. You can switch those bottom two, however you want to do it. There's six guys right there. I mean, Willie Mitchell, I like him a lot. I know Daryl Sutter likes him, but you're not going to pay him 2 years, $8 million, based on the cap situation you're in. You signed Jeff Schultz for a cheap contract. I don't like Jeff Schultz, really, but as a seventh guy, you can hop in. He's a bigger guy. He's got a long reach.
Yeah.
And for Vay, I mean, it's space, it's contracts on the books and all those things. They're just so loaded. It's a luxury. And they're, if you're bringing the same team intact and the way they were able to go through San Jose and Chicago and Anaheim and the Rangers, I mean, you got to feel great about yourself.
I don't want to question too much what Dean Lombardi does, but I do think Gaborik maybe got a few extra years there.
Yeah,
I was thinking 3 or 4 years, not seven.
Yeah. The San Jose Sharks, they didn't do much in free agency at all. Their biggest signing, I guess, is John Scott, literally and figuratively. In
I think
cases.
I skate faster than John Scott.
Yeah, you're not exactly. Other than that, they pretty much stood pat. They traded away Brad Stewart for a second-round pick and a sixth-round pick, and they acquired Ty McGinn for a third-round pick from Philadelphia. Again, a peculiar offseason in San Jose. There's still questions surrounding, is Joe Thornton going to be back? Does he want to be back? And, those answers certainly have not come to fruition yet.
Well, I know Brent Burns moving back to defense obviously helps, I think, solidify that back end. Is it good enough? You do lose Dan Boyle too, Drew, right?
Sure.
So, and then, of course, I find it a little bit odd that they had questions in goal. McLennan didn't trust Niemi at the end of the season. He only has 1 year left on his deal, and they're not addressing the goaltending yet, at least.
They re-signed Alex Stalock to 2 years and $3.2 million.
I agree with you, Drew. I find it's a peculiar offseason so far. I mean, is it the same old? And I've seen the arguments for same old. I don't buy them.
Yeah.
And you just want to go and lose again? Okay. I mean, I don't know. A ton of these guys on this team, they're not winners. They don't win when it matters. So if you want to go in with this squad again and put up 100 points in the regular season, by all means. And then when you feel pressure in the playoffs, fold like a tent.
Ezzy, we'll skip over your comments. I'll let you touch on Vancouver here because we're tight for time. Vancouver loses Mike Santarelli to Toronto. They do sign Radim Verbata, 2 years, $10 million. He gets $5 million per year of a salary cap hit. Ryan Miller is their new goaltender, 3 years, $18 million, $6 million salary cap hit. Of course, they trade away Ryan Kessler and a third-round pick to Anaheim in exchange for Nick Bonino, Lucas Pisa, a first-round pick, a third-round pick. They trade away Jason Garrison and Jeff Costello to Tampa Bay in exchange for a second-round pick.
Yep.
They acquire Derek Dorsett from the Rangers for a third-round pick, and they acquire Lyndon Vay from Los Angeles for a second-round pick. So Vancouver's very busy with all the moves they made, and I believe, if I saw correctly earlier today, they re-signed Chris Tanev as well to a one-year contract.
Yeah, former Manitoba Moose. I mean, we knew Kessler was getting traded, Richie. We knew that Jason Garrison was making too much money. It's important to note Derek Dorsett, Lyndon Vay, both guys that Willie Desjardins coached in Medicine Hat of the WHL before he was a Texas Stars coach and before he was an associate coach in the NHL. Important to note that. So I like the moves they made. And the thing is, the Vancouver Canucks, by going out and getting Ryan Miller, an established NHL goalie, as opposed to Markstrom and Eddie Lack, who right now you're not really sure if they can play 50 or 60 games in the NHL. I think you know that they can probably play more of a backup role. I like the moves. And Verbata is a guy that we know that he can score 30 goals, even 40 goals at the NHL level. So I think by getting Verbata and Miller, they're giving themselves more of a chance to make the playoffs. I don't know if they did enough to... I think they're still a bubble playoff team. I don't know if they've, for example, done enough to beat out a team like the Dallas Stars for that last playoff spot. But I think I like the moves, and I think that, you know, Jim Benning's gone in there, and he's obviously, Richie, not afraid to make moves. So I think is Bonino going to replace Kessler? I think, especially in the physical department, he won't. But I think that, you know, you get Vay, a young player, he can compete for a spot. You know, you've got a lot to be excited about there. Bo Horvat is a prospect that I like. But I think this is a team that still might be on the outside looking in when it comes to playoff time.
I think so too, but they'll be tougher to play against probably than you thought originally. Jim Benning comes in there with a plan. You got four first-round picks the past 2 years, all forward. So you know they're going to be coming through. Jake Virtanen, McCann. You have Shinkarik, you have Horvat, different types of players too. Those guys can mix it up a bit, some of those guys. And they don't mind going into the corners. And that's been an issue for Vancouver. You still have a pretty solid defense. You add goaltender with a younger team, not that young now, but going to be younger.
Yep.
Coming up. 3 years, Miller, you know he's not, I don't think right now he's playing at the level that he was before. I think sometimes his name carries more value than the actual play on the ice.
And they didn't go crazy, Richie, by signing Miller to 6 years.
Exactly, 3 years. And you got Verbata to play with Sedin's, the guy who has a trigger. You know, he's got a really good wrist shot, Verbata, for 2 years. Jim Benning comes in with the plan. He makes more trades in an afternoon than Kevin Chevalier's made in 3 years. And he creates an identity. He knows who he wants out, and if they want out, he wants them out, and he knows what kind of players he wants in. Doesn't sign it for too long. Adds a ton of picks so he can trade some picks for value. Gets tougher on the bottom lines. I like what he's doing there.
Let's head to the Eastern Conference when we return. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It was a disappointing morning for Jeannie Bouchard in the Wimbledon women's final, but Canada can say that they have a Wimbledon champion, as Vasek Pospisil out of Vancouver and his partner Jack Sock have just defeated the Bryan brothers in 5 sets to win the men's doubles championship at Wimbledon. So congratulations to Vasek Pospisil, yet another one of the up-and-coming stars of Canadian tennis and 2014 Wimbledon men's doubles champion.
Are the Bryan brothers related to that wrestler? What's his name?
Daniel Bryan?
Yeah. Who, as he always does, yes, yes. Are they related?
No, no relation.
Third brother?
Maybe the Bryan triplets. I'm not sure. I doubt it. But you know, we'll look into that.
You know, Richie, I know we got to get through some other teams here in the Eastern Conference, but we bring this up every year around Wimbledon time. A lot of people don't know that Drew had a pretty wicked tennis serve.
Drew's a pretty good tennis player.
Yeah,
it was my claim to fame as a youth, and it's been straight downhill ever since. I probably peaked around the age of 15 or so, maybe 12.
Back in the 1960s, when they still used wooden rackets, yeah, Drew had quite a serve.
Actually, we just used frying pans. That's what we used. We couldn't afford wood. Wood was very expensive back then, so we had to use just frying pans to play tennis in the 60s. Let's move to the Eastern Conference. We'll start in the Atlantic Division. Let's start with the Boston Bruins, because it certainly won't take very long. They didn't sign anybody. They didn't acquire anybody via trade. They lost 5 players, the most significant of them being Andre Mezeros. He goes to Buffalo 1 year, $4.125 million. Jerome McGinley, we mentioned him earlier. He goes to Colorado. Sean Thornton goes to Florida, and goaltender Chad Johnson goes to the New York Islanders. Fortunately, These are just sort of spare parts for the most part in Boston. Ginla's a guy, the kind of guy they're probably going to try and replace the most. But that'll be, you know, they're still the Boston Bruins. They're still a dynamite team.
It'll be internal because we're going to have to probably replace him by moving Louis Erickson up from the third line with Carl Soderberg to the top six. And Peter Chiarelli's spoken about this. I mean, he thinks he can do it, and I agree. I mean, Louis Erickson's a top six forward. Mm-hmm. Good skater. Left-handed shot, on the right-handed side. Very good shot. Very good defensively. He had a tough year with the concussions. He's able to make that move up, and Riley Smith's emergence has helped solidify the right side too. So, you know, Ginla is a loss. Let's not overlook that. But this team has an awful lot of depth. I think they'd like to be able to address their defense. And I know Seidenberg's coming back, and that's going to be his loss was significant. But if they and Torrey Krug, obviously they got to get him under contract. And Dougie Hamilton was progressing last year. Chara doesn't maybe look like he did 5 years ago, so I think they'd probably like to add another defenseman, but they have lots of time to do that.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same vein as you, Richie, as far as the Boston Bruins go. I was expecting, and I think there was some interest to bring Jerome Ginla back. I don't know if there was interest in bringing him back for 3 years. As I mentioned, a little bit more surprised that he got 3 years. I was thinking he might even get 1 year, let alone 2 years, but the Boston Bruins are a team, as you mentioned, have so many players under contract long-term. And Louis Erickson, I agree, now he's going to be asked to do more because he struggled at times last year after coming over from Dallas. And Riley Smith really was kind of the surprise of that trade when really it was kind of viewed as a throw-in for that trade. But still so solid up the middle. David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron. I thought Carl Soderberg was also very impressive last year because when he came in 2 years ago, guys, right at the end of the season, we didn't know a lot about him. We know that he played in the Swedish Elite League, but we weren't sure how he was going to fit in with a very deep Boston Bruins team. And sure, you lose a guy like Sean Thornton, who's kind of been a staple of the fourth line there, but that gives another player a chance to come up who maybe played for Providence last year. But really, I agree with Richie. The biggest really move that they're going to make is the move that they didn't make, because you're going to get Dennis Seidenberg back. And you look at this team, and I think the writing is on the wall as far as, you know, Zdeno Chara. I think, you know, we could argue about how many productive years he has left with this team, maybe three, maybe less even, you know, 3 or 4 years, even though he's a Norris candidate. I think, you know, you're talking about a guy who's now in his mid-30s. So he's not a guy that you can say is going to be solid for another 5 or 6 years. Maybe because of how good of shape he's in, he might be able to be that good for five years. But I think the point that Richie's trying to make is that you're probably going to have to bring in another guy, because he's not going to be able to play 30 minutes for 5 years. That's for sure. Not many guys can play that at 25, let alone 35. So I think you're a little bit surprised they didn't make any moves. But this is still a very, very deep team. And, you know, a guy like Chad Johnson, Nicholas Svedberg will be a fine backup for Tuukka Rask, who obviously won the Vezina Trophy. So this Boston Bruins team is still one of the deepest teams in the league.
The Buffalo Sabres were active in free agency, signing Brian Gionta from Montreal, getting him for 3 years and $12.75 million. Matt Molson and Cody McCormick were both traded to Minnesota in the same trade. They both end up back in Buffalo. Molson getting 5 years, $25 million. Cody McCormick, 3 years, $4.5 million. Mazaros goes to Buffalo, 1 year, $4.125 million. And then...
How'd that negotiation go? Hey, I got a seventh defenseman for you, six or seventh defenseman for you, that really can't crack any good team's back end. Okay, let's give him $4 million.
And then they got Josh Georges from the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for a second round pick. I like what Buffalo did here. They've improved. I mean, they're still not a playoff team, but they're better than they were last year.
I think let's address the fact that they need to add money on the cap for the next few years, Drew.
Yeah.
They got nobody under contract for next year. And at forward, before they signed Molson and Gionta, the only player they had making over $2 million for next year was Cody Hodgson at 4.25. So Gionta comes in, and they sign him for 3 years just to be the leader, taking this team through a rebuilding project. And it shows that Gionta's taking the money. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him for it, but he doesn't want to win. So let's just note that. Molson, obviously taking the money as well, 5 years, $5 million, was comfortable there. Kind of a weird contract. I didn't really understand it necessarily, but
it's very. I find it very interesting that that I know that he probably, you know, Matt Molson probably could have gotten pretty close to that. He probably could have gotten, well, maybe $4 million from a better team.
I don't remember the exact contract numbers. I don't think they were revealed of the Islanders, but playing beside Tavares on an up and coming team, ahead of the curve certainly of Buffalo. I like Buffalo's management better than I like the Islanders, but kind of a weird contract. Josh Georges was a guy I thought the Jets should have been interested in, a left side character guy. who wouldn't go to Toronto because of the rivalry. That had a lot of value to me. Yeah. I'm surprised. I know it was a second-round pick, and I know they traded one for Setoguchi, but just that kind of a guy to fill out your top four. Maybe skill-wise, he's not your top four guy, but he blocks shots, heart and soul. Needed a guy, I think, a better version of Mark Stewart. I thought that would have been something they're interested in under contract for the next 4 years. He will help a young defense move forward, like a guy like Tyler Myers, who has had trouble. They have Ristolainen, Ezzy, Zadorov, Zadorov they want to bring up. They have a lot of young talent. So this is about getting money on the books and about developing a young team. But it's odd that some veteran players with a choice would opt to go to a team that's so far away.
And I think Tim Murray has shown that people will go to Buffalo. Players will go to Buffalo. And you'll overpay, but you'll still go there. And you know, Matt Molson, 5 years, $25 million. For a guy that's a perennial 30-goal scorer, I think that's right around where he should be paid. And you look at the Josh Georges trade, really unfortunate for Montreal. I really don't like that situation for Montreal. It's clear that they were kind of in a situation where they were going to move him. But Josh Georges, you're talking about, Richie mentioned, he's a heart and soul guy. I mean, Josh Georges is an excellent defenseman, and he has been for several years for the Montreal Canadiens. And sure, you still have a lot of good players there on defense, but like the moves that Buffalo made, it's a team that has a very bright future. You know, Richie mentioned Ristolainen and Zadorov on defense, and Mikhail Grigorenko, if he ever decides to play consistently for the Buffalo Sabres, you know, the future is bright. And Matt Molson, Brian Gionta, they get you up to the cap floor, and they also give you some NHL players. I mean, they don't have a lot of NHL players there. Cody Hodgson and Tyler Ennis, and you've got good players there, but they kind of solidify that top six. Both Gionta and Molson will be key factors in the top six. They'll play on the power play. So I like the moves, and you know, again, Georges instantly becomes their number one defenseman, so I like that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll continue with the Atlantic Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We continue with our division by division, team by team look at NHL free agency so far. We continue on with the Montreal Canadiens, who we mentioned, they lost a number of players. Brian Gionta goes to Buffalo, Thomas Vanek to Minnesota, who they obviously weren't going to bring back Vanek after his playoff performance, but they did dip into free agency, acquiring Tom Gilbert from the Florida Panthers, 2 years, $5.6 million. They got P.A. Parenteau from the Colorado Avalanche, as well as a fifth-round pick. Yeah. They won the Jiří Sikáč sweepstakes, which I didn't know existed, and rather would not have known that he existed. They got him from the KHL, and they got Joey McDonald as a depth goaltender out of Calgary. Your thoughts? And Manny Malhotra, I should also mention, goes from Carolina to Montreal for 1 year and $850,000. You know, your thoughts on the Habs moves in free agency so far?
Well, they got worse.
Yeah.
He got worse, yeah. Parenteau, you know, he can snipe a bit, and he can play with, he can, he's not the biggest guy. They went down in character, and that's what I worry about. Because Parenteau is taking your character level down, not up. Losing Georges is taking your character level down. Malhotra will help it out a bit, but Tom Gilbert and Mike Weaver, are we just going to reincarnate the Florida Panthers defense of 2013? Signed off the scrap heap? I mean, Mike Weaver, I like character guy, can block shots, but he's a bottom pairing defenseman at the most. Probably want him to be 7 against some teams based on his lack of speed. And then Tom Gilbert, I mean, Tom Gilbert signs a 2-year, $5.6 million deal. What? Why? So you're going to have his duck of a shot on the point, his lack of willingness to go into the corners? I mean, he can make a first pass. And, like, get around okay, but, like, who's bidding that much for Tom Gilbert? I just don't get it. They've had an odd offseason. And if they think they're going to go to the conference final again with this roster, Eastern Conference or not, I just don't see it.
Ezzy?
I think you've lost quite a bit, especially in Josh Georges, a guy who we mentioned last segment, who has been really the everything defensively for this team, and really whether he's matched up with PK Subban or Andre Markov. He's done an excellent job. He's physical, and he's always at the top of the league in block shots, and he's a big part of that dressing room. You're losing your captain in Brian Gionta, and I don't think we expected Thomas Vanek to come back. Thomas Vanek was a rental player, but I think there is a drop-off with Tom Gilbert, and Mike Weaver did an excellent job, really surprising a lot in the playoffs last year, but you know, he is a 6'7 defenseman. There's nothing wrong with that, and they only signed him for 1 year. There's no real problem with that. I like Manny Malhotra, a guy that you can play at fourth line center and kind of replaces Danny Briere in that sense, who can be more of a kind of a face off guru and checker guy. But I mean, I think, you know, as far as the big move, which is really bringing in PA Parenteau, you're hoping that he provides more offense in your top six there, but a guy who struggled to be in the top six for the Colorado Avalanche, and a guy, by the way, that the Colorado Avalanche were happy to get rid of.
Yeah, so, they're trying to get rid of.
So Briere, Gionta, and Georges, those are key guys in the dressing room for you.
That's right.
And key pieces helped them beat the Boston Bruins. And I really like the future of this team, by the way. I mean, Brendan Gallagher and Alex Galchenyuk, and you've got some good pieces there on defense with Bolia and Tenorti, but I don't know when I look at this team if overall they got better.
There's the character drop off for Gionta, and I didn't mention that. I mean, there's just a leadership void, I feel like, there now, and I don't know. It's been an odd off season in Montreal. I know you lose Vanek, and you're not going to pay him what he probably was seeking, even if he wanted to stay there, which I don't think he did. But he was terrible in the playoffs. But you're losing talent too. I mean, Gionta's not what he once was. Probably a third line right winger now at most, and he got overpaid. But and their defense is kind of slow.
The identity there is taking a hit.
Yeah, what is the identity? I have concerns about that team having a drop-off.
Like, it's clear that this team quickly drew that it's PK Subban's team here,
right,
and they got to get him under contract. But you also, you got to really make sure that you take care of the depth of your team. And we're talking about now guys that were depth players for your team. Now other players are going to have to step up, and now you're going to be counting more on Brendan Gallagher and Alex Galchenyuk. And there's nothing wrong with that, because those guys are players that are, you know, entering the primes of their careers. But, you know, this is a team that come playoff time, I think they might be a little thin on the depth side.
And still small up front, and I think slow on the back end.
The Ottawa Senators, we mentioned earlier that they lost Jason Spezza. They traded him away. They bring in Alex Chiasson. That's the key of the trade. They also dip into free agency. They signed David Legault to a 2-year, $6 million contract, $3 million salary cap hit. And they re-signed Milan Mihalik for a 3-year, $12 million contract, $4 million per year. You know, the Senators, again, they just seem to be tweeners. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
You know,
let's just talk about now the 10th place finish in the conference next year.
Yeah,
let's do the analysis. They're not an easy team to play against. I don't think, you know, Drew, when you're going up against Turris and Legault, and you have enough guys on the top, and you can put up some points. You have a young defense, which I actually like for the future. I think they have some good young pieces there, and you have some good goaltenders. You're not a bad team, but you're not a good one, and you're a tweener, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, David Legault probably would have made sense in some other teams in terms of playing a kind of a second, third line role on a good team, but he wants to make this cash. Again, I don't blame him for it, but he doesn't want to win.
Yeah.
So, doesn't want to win as much as if he signed somewhere else, is what I'm trying to say.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, they dipped into free agency, signing Leo Komarov, who I believe is the second coming of Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky all in one package. Stefan Robidaugh goes to Toronto, 3 years, $9 million. Mike Santarelli from Vancouver to Toronto on a one-year deal. And Petri Kontiola, who's only a step worse than Leo Komarov, I believe, for 1 year and $1.1 million. They also acquire Roman Polak from the St. Louis Blues via trade, and Matt Fratton from the Columbus Blue Jackets. They lose Tim Gleason, Jay McClement, Nikolai Kuhlman, Drew McIntyre, Dave Boland, and Mason Raymond. They seem like they're pretty similar to the team that they had last year, just with different guys.
They are, and you know, Matt Fratton's a guy that used to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but you look at the guys they brought in. Mike Santarelli played a little bit for the Winnipeg Jets, and then actually played quite well for the Vancouver Canucks and scored quite a few goals for them, and that's an okay. He's going to be a pickup. He's a guy that he's going to play in your bottom six. Leo Komarov, I know you're making jokes. He's a guy that a couple years ago was at the top of the NHL in hits. He's a guy that you put on the third or fourth line, and he adds a physical element to your team. You know, he's not a guy that's going to score 30 goals by any means, but right. He's a guy that, you know, adds the sandpaper element to your game, and that's important for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They lacked that at times last year, but, you know, Roman Polak for Carl Gunnarsson, we talked about that a little bit before. Gunnarsson, of course, going to the St. Louis Blues. Polak, better defensive defenseman, but again, the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think, when you look at as a core, they're lacking, again, a number one defenseman, and Dion Phaneuf, I know they gave him number one defenseman type minutes, but I think that he's just a step below the elite defenseman in the NHL, and I still have issues with that D-core, and I think, you know, is James Reimer going to come back? Are they going to go a different way? We still aren't really clear about that. It looks like there's a good chance that Bernier and Reimer do come back. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs are again, in a situation where last year at the beginning of the season, I thought that they were shoo-in to make the playoffs, and then they lost 12 of their last 14 games in that epic collapse and missed out on the playoffs. I think, again, they're going to be in tough in that Eastern Conference to make the playoffs, because I think there's a significant drop-off after the Kessel, Van Riemsdyk, Bozak line. I think your defense is still needs lacks another top-four guy, even a top-two guy, Richie. So I think the only real strength of this team is in goal.
I mean, their first line center is still Tyler Bozak, and their second line center is still Nazem Kadri, and their third line center is
one of them.
One of the other guys we spoke about.
Yeah.
So, do I like that they're changing the way they play a bit, in the sense that Polak is a little more aggressive and physical, and they need need to kind of complement the skill set of Gardner and of Riley and guys who move the puck and left-handed shooting guys by adding two right-handed shooting more tougher players? Yeah, I don't mind that. Robida, when he gets healthy, character, works hard. I like that they're trying to change that attitude a little bit. Komarov, again, it's a longer-term contract, but he is more aggressive, and they know what they're getting in him. That's the one thing. You know what you're getting in him. Yeah. Play your kind of third-line wing spot. Santarelli is whatever. I mean, he's a fourth-line guy. He's a speed guy. I don't know anything about Petri Kontiola. And Matt Fratton is just, he's got a good shot, but can he skate the NHL level? Is he big enough? I don't think there's anything there to talk about for too much. You haven't really, you Boland, you lose him. Likely overall on paper, you probably get a little bit worse, but I don't think you can hardly really distinguish this year's team from last year's team. So, and I think that other teams in the conference, you look at it. You know, did they get better? And then we'll evaluate it come preview time whether or not they're going to make the playoffs. But nothing special here.
Let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll finish off the Atlantic Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment. Saturday afternoon here. Reminder, next week, back to 9 a.m. start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It is.
All summer long, 9 a.m.
It's early.
Yeah. You'll be okay. We'll wake you up. 9 a.m. next Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at Bernstein's Deli. com. We continue our look at the Atlantic Division. Let's talk about the Detroit Red Wings, a team that really made three signings. Two of them were their own players. They re-signed Kyle Quincy 2 years, $8.5 million. They re-signed Jonas Gustafsson a number of weeks ago to a 1 year, $1.85 million contract. They get Kevin Porter out of Buffalo on a 1 year deal, and they lose David Legwand 2 years, $6 million. To the Ottawa Senators. By all accounts, the Detroit Red Wings wanted to be a lot more active and had a lot of hooks in the ocean to try and make some signings, but they couldn't get anything done. Is Detroit as a premier free agency destination now finished?
I don't know about that, guys, because a year ago, Daniel Alfredsson decided to leave the only team he's ever played for, and go to the Detroit Red Wings. So I don't think that's the case, because as we saw last year, guys, the Detroit Red Wings still made the playoffs. So I think you're looking at a team that there's a changing of the guard, and I think they've decided to go younger. They decide not to bring back Daniel Alfredson, Todd Bertuzzi, Dan Cleary, Mikael Samuelson. Leguan turns out to be a rent-a-player, a guy they were hoping that would kind of help them come playoff time, Richie.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a team with the emergence of Gustav Nyquist, Thomas Tatar, Luke Glendening, Riley Shahan. You saw guys coming up from Grand Rapids of the AHL last year, team guys that had success at the AHL level. Those are the guys that they're counting on this year, because they didn't go after a premier free agent. And I think maybe they might have.
Was there a premier free agent? I think that's the first question.
And if you consider a Jerome Iginla or a Thomas Vanek a premier free agent, that's probably who was at the top of the pack.
Probably as good as free agency is going to get nowadays.
That's what I'm saying. So who do they miss?
Yeah. They didn't miss. I mean,
they overpaid Quincy. I don't love Quincy. You know, he's inconsistent at times. I think can be soft, but a 2-year deal can deal with it. But otherwise, you know, they still have to sign Thomas Tatar. They still have to sign Danny DeKeyser. They probably will bring back Alfredson. So you look at their cap space; they're just under $10 million. They sign a couple of those guys. How much money did they have to offer? Never mind who turned them down. So,
yeah, well, the Steven Weiss contract is really what right now looking like an albatross.
Too early to say.
Back.
Too early to say.
Yeah, didn't play enough games.
Yeah,
too early to say.
The Florida Panthers were tremendously busy, of course, because they had a ton of cap room and supposedly an owner with deep pockets who wanted to spend some money. Let's go through it. Jussi Jokinen gets 4 years and $16 million. Dave Boland, 5 years and $27.5 million. Al Montoya, ex of the Jets, gets 2 years, $2.1 million. Sean Thornton, 2 years, $2.4 million. Derek McKenzie, 3 years, $3.9 million. Willie Mitchell, 2 years, $8.5 million. They lose Scott Clemenson, Tom Gilbert, and Jesse Winchester. So the Panthers were certainly busy retooling that roster. They're better than last year, but, I mean, are they a playoff team?
Yeah, they might be in a weak conference. Are they better than last year? Yeah. But do they get any value for the money they put out? No. And they overpaid everybody.
Yeah. Jussi Jokinen was on waivers 2 years ago. Could have been had for nothing.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Jussi Jokinen. I mean, you know, $4 million for 3 years. Okay, per year for 3 years. Okay, I mean, he's a little bit soft. It's good skill. Is versatile, but Dave Boland, 5.5 for a third line center for 5 years is crazy. Willie Mitchell, again, 2 year deals don't kill you, but 4.25 in a skating game where he's not the best skater, when he's going to be defending way more than he was in Los Angeles. Don't like that deal. Thornton, 1.2. I mean, he's better than Thorburn, so if that's what Thorburn's getting, he's only getting 2 years. Derek McKenzie, 1.3. They overpaid everybody. This team isn't that good. They're going to have to rely on, obviously, the youngsters like Bukestad and Barkov and those guys to progress. But it was an odd spending spree by Dale Talon based on who he spent it on. I didn't quite get any of the moves, frankly.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, they also were very active in free agency and in the trade market. Let's go through the trades first. They acquired Jason Garrison and Jeff Costello from Vancouver in exchange for a second-round pick. They acquire Sam Gagne in exchange for Teddy Purcell. They then trade Sam Gagne and B.J. Crombie into the Arizona Coyotes for a sixth-round pick. They trade Nate Thompson to Anaheim for a fourth and a seventh-round pick. They dip into free agency signing Anton Strahlman. Rallman, 5 years, $22.5 million. Brian Boyle, 3 years, $6 million. Evgeny Nabokov, 1 year, $1.55 million. So the Lightning were very, very active in retooling their roster. I didn't understand the Gagne move. Explain the Gagne move for me.
They just tried to get rid of Purcell's cap hit. That's all. They wanted to spend the money elsewhere. So that was just a cap dump. And they had prearranged. It's more of a baseball deal. They prearranged a deal with Arizona, saying, you know, if you'll take this guy, then we'll be able to dump Purcell. That's all they did. And in terms of the other guys, you know, Ezzy, why don't you get in quickly before we go?
Well, I know we're going to have to move the Metropolitan Division to next week.
Yeah.
But even having not covered that division, to me, the Tampa Bay Lightning are the big winners of free agency. Love that they re-signed Ryan Callahan, a free agent. I love how they bring in Brian Boyle and Anton Strahlman, who played with Callahan in New York. I really like those signings. Brian Boyle did an excellent job there playing on a center for them, a guy that can kill penalties and is good on face-offs, adds size, can play a physical game. And this goes back to what Stevie Y did earlier by signing guys like Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat to contracts at good cap numbers. So I really like what the Tampa Bay Lightning did, a team that was embarrassed, let's be honest, by the Montreal Canadiens getting swept in the first round. To me, it's a team that has a very bright future. You've got offense. You've got some grit there. I think, you know, if Ben Bishop is healthy come playoff time, which he wasn't this past year, I think this is a team that can surprise many in the playoffs.
Really good value in the Boyle trade. I wonder about their defense, whether it can defend well enough after Victor Hedman.
Hectic show. 2 hours flies by when you have to recap team by team, division by division. We'll get to the Metropolitan Division next Saturday when we return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website where we have all the latest information on the Winnipeg Jets, including development camp, is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim, for producer Remus, for our buddy Sean Asora sitting in, for Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for World Cup quarterfinal action between the Netherlands and Costa Rica.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.